Okay, so I will talk about simulations, and I will present work by all these hardworking people here. And what I decided to do is not to tell you where magnetic fields in galaxy clusters come from and things like that, what we also do in simulations, but I wanted to do a kind of different approach to explain you how these things can be related. And I want to explain that to you based on this kind of diagram, which is taken from a paper from Schlick, Eiser, and collaborators in 87. And what is plotted here is magnetic field strength in microgauss, and that is spatial diffusion coefficient, which you can relate to a turbulence velocity and a length scale with some factor in between. And what these people did, and you hear that already in earlier talks, that you have radio halos in certain galaxies, which are most likely connected to turbulence and particle acceleration. And they did a particle acceleration model. Currently, we think that might not be longer the most favorable model, but just take it as a cartoon. And what they plotted is, what do they need to explain the radio emission of the Kummer cluster in this kind of reacceleration model in terms of magnetic field and the spatial diffusion coefficients related to turbulence, and that is this kind of band here which is needed to explain Kummer radio emission. And then there are kind of very broad limits on all these quantities, and what I now want to do is to fill this diagram a little bit with actual data and simulations, and then I will talk how these kind of things are related to what we think is going on. So first of all, that's our best friend, Kummer galaxy cluster, diffuse X-ray emission shown here. And there are some radio galaxies inside which emit polarized emission. You can map Faraday rotation against them. And there's a lot of very active group of observers which are currently analyzing such kind of data, and state of the art is that you can explain these observations here with assuming that you have a turbulent magnetic field spectra, which is of course related to underlying hydrodynamic turbulence, and you can do some modeling, and you can infer parameters of these models which best fits these observations. That's done on several clusters, and again, I don't want to go into detail here. Just for this kind of, for a Kummer cluster, you infer a central magnetic field which is around this line here. So that's from observations. Now, there are other observations of turbulence, again, for Kummer cluster. That's based from a paper by Peter Schücke and collaborators. And what you see is artificial temperature, pressure, and entropy maps. And you see the fluctuations in these artificial pressure maps. And that can be interpreted as turbulence. And you can look in that paper. And that's compatible with a Kolmogorov-like spectra. Of course, the fluctuation spectra you see here is on very large scales due to the observations, but you can extrapolate a spectrum which you measure down to scales of 10 kiloparsecs, which are interesting, and again, you can infer what would be this kind of diffusion coefficient you would obtain from that, just calculating by that. And if you put it on that diagram, you find something like here. Again, please keep that as a sketch, and it's there are factors of two or more involved here. So, but that this kind of two measurements just crosses a point where it is not too far off of this kind of expectation from reacceleration, it's already telling you that all these things can be related. And the rest of the talk will be on that related. Now, what do we expect from simulations? So there's, for example, simulations on galactic scales, and that was first put forward by Lesch and Hanasch, and especially the group of Hanasch is doing a lot of current simulation works, and that is just one example. That's a galaxy simulated, and what they want to explain is the magnetic field in the galaxy, and they involve a dynamo, and to drive the dynamo, they need cosmic rays, and also spatial diffusion, and what they use for to reproduce this dynamo on much smaller scales, again, would lie in that diagram something here, but again, it's on very much smaller scale. So if you would extrapolate that to a little bit larger scales, which we are interested as before, you would come to a very similar place. Now, as you hear it also, you have hydrodynamic simulation of galaxy formation, and that is a plot which is provided by Irina Zurelova at MPA, and she has a poster out here. Unfortunately, she couldn't make it for visa reasons. And what is plotted here is the amplitude of the velocity in the simulation versus scales, and overplotted are various different simulations. The blue lines are AMR simulations using ENSO provided by Franco Vazza. The red one are SPH simulations of galaxy clusters from our work in the early days. And additional, here's one point from an even different numerical simulation, that so-called large eddy simulation. So it's a subgrid model for turbulence, and that would predict that the point should lie here. And again, what I want to demonstrate here is that besides some details and all this stuff, this numerical simulation converged quite nicely in what would be the expected amplitude of a velocity, of a turbulent velocity in the system at this kind of resolution scales, which will be of order 100 or a little bit less than 100 kilometers a second. And again, you can convert that in a diffusion coefficient. And if you do that, you get this line here. So again, all this theoretical modeling would predict you that you should be somewhere here. And now the rest of the talk, I will show you that if you do MHD simulations and we include this kind of spatial diffusion in our equations, we find that we have to live somewhere where here this red diamond is to reproduce the observations of Kuma galaxy cluster. And in the second part of the talk, I will show you if you take such simulations, apply some more modern versions of these real acceleration models, you can solve a couple of problems for the appearance of radio halos, and you can reproduce quite nicely some of the observational effects. So what we're doing cluster simulations, as you saw before, but additional, we do MHD. So we have additional to solve induction equations, and we solve induction equation with this additional diffusion term, and as I showed you, we interpret that diffusion term not only as a Spitzer term, which would be extremely small, so in the diagram you saw before, it would be way down in the basement, but it's a kind of macroscopic turbulence driven. And that is just results from test simulation to show you that the code can handle this situation quite well. So the diamonds are outputs of the code for test problems, and the solid lines are the analytic solutions. So you see they perfectly agree. Now, to study Kuma galaxy cluster, it's a very massive cluster. You have to do a very large campaign to get these clusters. So first, you have to start with a large cosmological box. So that is our 1 gigaparsec cosmological box we start from. We've selected the 24 most massive clusters in that system to get a really representative sample, and we simulate them with high resolution. And here you see X-ray surface brightness maps of these 24 clusters, and you can see that you get various different morphologies, but the really important point is it's a really a volume-limited sample drawn from a large cosmological simulation. Now, we selected 4 clusters of them, which in morphology looked like a little bit like Kuma, so we excluded extreme multiple mergers and very relaxed clusters, and we simulate them with our MHD code, varying the value of this eta in this range for a couple of them, and here you see radial magnetic field profiles obtained from that simulations, and the pink lines here again are the best fit to the observations plus 3 sigma contours, and the different color lines here are what we get from our simulations, and you can see that without any spatial diffusion, the magnetic field profiles would in general tend to be too steep, but if we include this kind of diffusivity, as I showed you before, we get some very nice flat profiles, which nicely fits the observations. So that are all 24 clusters here. You see the scatter of the different systems here. That is all simulated with this diffusivity, which I described before. And you can compare that to the observations in more detail. Again, this dashed line here is the best fit to the observations. And the blue line is the mean of all this profile with the scatter around. So it's very interesting here to point out that these kind of models really representing the observations quite well. There are here differences in the shape, but you have to keep in mind that these observations are really, they impose this kind of shape of the magnetic field profile. And so to speak, the detailed comparison of the exact shape here is not really fair because it's an imposed model, and this kind of result will very nicely represent the observations. And you see also that the scatter here is not very large, but of course there is some scatter between the different models. So that's another comparison here, that the central magnetic field of these clusters as function of the real mass of the system. So again, here you see all the different simulations of our galaxy clusters, and you see the best fit of the observed coma cluster with this error bars. And again, you see a very nice co-alignment of the simulation with the observations. And again, you see some scatter in the different systems, but it's very compatible except this one outlier. And as I told you, for this, or as you saw already in previous talks, for this radio observations of radio halos, there are some clusters which have radio halos and others which don't show radio halos. And the big question is, could that be, for example, driven by different magnetic field values in these different systems? And as you can see here, the scatter is not very large, so it will be very difficult to drive the different this dichotomy between radio halo and non-radio halo by this scatter in this magnetic field values we find in the simulations. So here's now the step from having very good models for galaxy clusters and for the magnetic field in galaxy clusters to modeling radio emission. And that is a collection of radio emission observed in galaxy clusters. So you see this two classes of radio emission. One is the central, very large, diffuse radio emission. So that is megaparsec size or larger. And you see this peripheral emission, as you saw before, radio relics was already mentioned. Now, the big problem is that these electrons, which you see here in synchrotron, have very short lifetime, so they cool very fast in the magnetic field by this radiation. So the big problem is how to distribute them over these large distances in the cluster. And therefore, there are two mechanisms in literature discussed to be able to spread the emission over these large volumes. One is that you produce cosmic ray protons that are so-called secondary models. So you have cosmic ray protons in the cluster which interact with the thermal gas and thereby produces secondary electrons, which you then see in radio. And the protons, being so much more massive than the electrons, can nearly freely diffuse over the cluster in their lifetime, so they don't cool. So they can fill this kind of radio, this kind of volume, and can emit. But then again, you need some other mechanism to turn on and turn off the radio halo. And as I showed you before, with the magnetic field, that might be more difficult, and I'll show you later more details. And this external radio emission here, which is this kind of very thin and localized radio emission, that is thought to be more related to shocks and direct acceleration of the electrons at the shock, or maybe some additional reacceleration behind. But that's a complete different phenomena, and I want just to concentrate on this radio halos, on this diffuse emission. And just again to show you what are the problems. So that is a comparison from very early work of us. Again, that are simulated galaxy clusters, and that is from this mentioned secondary model, where you have just filling the cluster with some cosmic ray protons and producing the electrons. And as you can see, it's already very hard to get this large extent. They are usually too small, the halos you get. And a second very interesting observation effect was also mentioned already in the introduction. If you plot the temperature versus the radioluminosity of clusters, so that is all observational data points, for the clusters where you find radio emission, they are very nicely correlated. But then there's a large class of clusters which are massive or hot or X-ray luminous. You can plot that in whatever quantity you want, which don't show any emission. And here, these arrow bars mark what simulations find as a scatter around these relations. So that is from early work by Francesco Mignatti, or our work, or some work by Fromer et al. And all this reproduces scaling quite nicely, but with a very small scatter. So this scatter is much too small to explain that galaxy clusters move here between these kind of two different populations. And that is a detailed study on the extent of the emission you would expect from such models. So again, here's the magnetic field as function of radius. And here, the green lines, again, are the observations from COMA. The black and the blue lines are simulation results from our simulations, which we could fit into these models. Then you have the freedom to distribute the cosmic ray protons in the secondary models. So you can choose either a flat distribution, or you can choose distribution found from numerical simulations, like the one by Christoph Fromer. And you can look what is the radio emission profile. And again, here's this green line is the observed profile, and the colored line are the profiles you expect from these models. And you can see you cannot match the extent. And if you want to match this extent, you have to push to have a lot of cosmic ray protons. So here you have an equipartition between cosmic ray protons and thermal gas. And that is really needed to explain this outer range. So it's very difficult for these models to make, for purely secondary driven models, to make this large extent. Another problem, or another observation effect you want to fit, is the spectral distribution of this radio emission you measure. Here are the data points, again, for COMA clusters, the black points. And you can see that the spectrum here in radio is somewhat curved. If you would have this kind of pure secondary model, you would expect a power law like this dashed line here. They are in literature discussed on how you could get this kind of spectral break or this curvature. For example, if you think on a set decrement of the galaxy cluster, that will be a negative flux in this frequency range of the galaxy cluster, of this radio halo. And here you see a simulation of the COMA cluster. And the red dots here are our expected SZ signal from our simulated COMA cluster compared to the black points, which is the real detected SZ signal of the COMA cluster. So you can see we get a very good match. If you apply this SZ signal to this power law line here, we get this red solid line. You get a curvature, as you can see, but it doesn't go through the data points. If you really want to have a model which goes through this data point, you have to push the SZ signal to this blue dashed line here, as suggested by people in literature. But as you can see, so you are able to manage the curvature in radio, but you completely fail to get the correct SZ signal in that case. So again, that's a critical point. If you look at these reacceleration models, which, for example, I showed in the first plot, they get naturally this kind of curved spectrum. Then, again, if you look at simulations, you can not only just look at the final stage of simulation, but you can also look at the evolution in the simulation. And that's again showing the radio power as function of temperature. Again, here's the data points and some upper limits here. And all these diamonds here are simulation data points at redshift zero. And all these lines are now evolutionary tracks of these systems from redshift 0.4 to redshift zero. And you can see that most of this evolution is going along this, diagram. And that's also to understand because if you have a merger event, it of course amplifies the magnetic field, but at the same time, the mass, temperature, and X-ray luminosity is going up. So you would expect something which is at least going slightly towards this correlation. And it's here it's going very parallel to the correlation. So there's no way of bringing these points down here to the observed upper limits by just evolutionary effects. So you really have to think about this turbulent real acceleration. And as I showed you before from our modeling of magnetic fields, we see that turbulence is important, and we have to take that even into account. Now, to do so, it's numerically quite challenging. So that's the reason why it's so far not really done on cluster simulations. So what you have to solve is, Fokker-Planck equation, for every particle in your simulation, you have to assume an efficiency on which turbulence by some magnetic waves is distributed in this momentum diffusion coefficient, and that's written down here. And then this electron population will have several cooling processes, and there's even more than listed here. Work in the literature done from an analytic point, but we want for the first time here apply it to simulations. So what we did is we set up a simplified galaxy cluster, so a merging of a 1-to-4 system here. And what is shown here is the density, temperature, then our subgrid measurement of the turbulence at the lowest scale of our resolution, and that is the magnetic field evolution. And we solve for every of the particles in the simulation, that is 2 times 128 cubed particles, we solve the Fokker-Planck equation and look how they evolve. And just to show you how that look in an animation, so you can see the second cluster coming in here. And you see the merging, you see shocks running through, you see turbulence driven behind the shocks, you see some secondary shocks for, from the second merger event. And so you can now try to see what is happening to the particles. And if you do so, you can make synthetic radio maps, and you will see how a galaxy cluster in that case would look in radio. So at the beginning, you have nothing because there's no turbulence. Then stuff is merging. There's a shock going out here, which is not very well treated by our numerics, so ignore that feature. But you see that here the halo is lighted up. So that is roughly megaparsec scale. That is smooth to the scale, to the resolution radio telescopes will have. And you see it even fading out after the merger. So that is one of the first attempts to really show this on-off of radio halos by the secondary, by this reacceleration models. And that are light curves. So again, here in arbitrary units, several quantities. So that is the magnetic field. You can see in the merge it gets amplified, and afterwards it dilutes a little bit. Then you see how the turbulence is injected by the merger and then cascading down. And the red one here is the synchrotron. Again, this peak is coming from the shock which is going out, so please ignore that. That doesn't, we don't think that's really physical. Of course, behind the shock, there will be turbulent acceleration, but our numeric techniques to measure that turbulence here is clearly confused by this outgoing shock. And then you see how the radio halo goes on and off again. And you now can ask how much is driven by this amplification of the magnetic field. So what we did is we run the simulation a second time, but just fixing the magnetic field of all the particles to a fixed value. And again, you can see nicely that's the shock which is going out, but how the radio halo is going on and how it dies away again. And so to speak, we can get this on-off independent on how the magnetic field amplification is going. So to come to the conclusions, I didn't write them down. I again went back to this nice diagram, which again should give you a feeling how the things are connected. And as I told you, from the simulations of galaxy cluster, we think we have to live somewhere here in this diagram, getting a correct magnetic field due to the turbulence of the structure formation in the galaxy cluster. And if we assume a certain spatial diffusion coefficient, we are even able to measure, to map the correct radial dependence of the magnetic field. And if we ask in secondary, since turbulent real acceleration models, we even are able to get with this kind of turbulence corresponding to that diffusion coefficient, we get radio halos which are going on and off, which have reasonable spectral shapes and also reasonable spatial extent. So that are the two main results from these simulations. And again, I think this diagram here is very nice to again show you how turbulence, which is indicated in this diffusion coefficient, and the magnetic field in galaxy clusters are related, and that we live in an interesting point where these kind of physical processes lead you to correct answers to the system. So I stop here for questions.
Many thanks. Let me ask the first question. In your model, where you have magnetic diffusion in it as well, to reproduce the coma profile. Now, probably in reality, you have more turbulent velocity outside and longer mean free path as well. So your turbulent diffusivity probably changes as a function of radius, probably goes up. Would you expect that to change qualitatively your picture?
In principle, that should be captured by the code, because that diffusivity which you plot here is something which is below your resolution scale. So all the diffusion process by the turbulence, in principle, if numerics is working fine, you should resolve if you are far enough above that. So in that sense, I don't think that should change the picture very much. But obviously, as we have a fixed diffusion constant independent of our resolution, that's an inconsistency. So here, of course, we have to go to much more detailed subscale modeling where we take these effects into account. So that is just the first start to show that these processes are important.
Right.
Very interesting. two questions. The first one, do you treat the cooling of the electron self consistently? Do you basically sort of follow the track of the electrons and that do you let them cool in more if they're sort of experiencing a stronger magnetic region? And yeah, this was the first question.
It's, so to speak, we solve Fokker-Planck for every volume element, so for every particle, take into account the local magnetic field. As injection, we take the local measured turbulence, so we run the set of decaying subsonic turbulent boxes to ensure that our measurement of the local turbulence is not biased and things like that.
What is the seed electron population? What is the energy density of these?
Oh, that's a constant pumping at the moment at low energies. So that is something which we have. It's, you don't see that in synchrotron. So it's far enough out to be not sampled by a synchrotron kernel. But of course,
energy,
that needs...
What is the energy density compared to the thermal energy density of the populations of gamma 200?
That's small.
Okay. Any other questions?
I'm wondering, if you consider cosmic acceleration, the first order cosmic acceleration in your calculation.
Yeah, that's it. That's turbulent acceleration. Yes.
Is that real acceleration, second order or first order?
Yeah.
That's the second order, I guess.
Oh, you mean shock acceleration?
Yeah, shock acceleration.
No. So far, we don't take shock acceleration to account. But that, of course, would. So at the moment, for this turbulent reacceleration to work, you need a population of already mildly non thermal electrons to be effective. So where that is coming from is the next question. So obviously in these kind of simulations on long term, we would like to link that to supernova explosions, to star formation, and to shocks. But so as a first trial on that, these later simulations of the radio halo were all non-cooling pleiadiabatic simulations. And we just assumed that there's a old population of electrons which get reaccelerated by the turbulence.
Another question? All right. Okay, thanks. Klaus again. Next up is Mateusz, who will talk about turbulence and magnetic fields in galaxy clusters.